мною принято решение о проведении специальной военной операции.
We are under attack. It is an attack against Western democracies and on the institutions that bind them.
What Russia is much more interested in doing is depicting the West as a failure.
Regime and President Yanukovych, they were trying to protect their enormous wealth.
This is Kremlin File.
Remember that one.
Wasn't there also a murder in the Tear Garden? Who was the guy that they murdered in the Tear Garden?
It was a Georgian national who had been working for the Ministry of the Interior within the KIS community, preventing the radicalization of the Chechens and preventing them from going to Syria, because there were also FSB operations going on, aiming at recruiting fighters. And the Georgian counterintelligence and the Ministry of the Interior managed to have enough people who were loyal to Georgia to sabotage the actions of Russian intelligence in that region. And so Selim Khangushvili was one of these people who were recruited. And he was assassinated in the Kleiner Tiergarten. He was killed by an FSB officer, Krasikov, who got convicted. And actually state terrorism was mentioned in during the process and was proved. This led, of course, it was the last piece of proof that the Russian Federation was conducting wet jobs in Europe and specifically in Germany, daylight. I usually said walking distance of the Chancellery. It's not really walking distance. It's something like 1.5 kilometer from the Chancellery, but still, it's downtown.
Mm-hmm. Is that the case where it was done to send basically from Russia and FU to the G7 meeting? Because it happened. There was a murder literally like a day or two before the G7 meeting years ago in, like, I believe 2019. Mm-hmm. And it was specifically done by Russia to, they carried out this assassination to, you know, because they were throwing a temper tantrum about the meeting.
Certainly, Putin was asked during a press conference and started a rant explaining that the victim was not really Georgian, but he was a bloodthirsty Chechen. So not only did they kill him, but he kind of found some kind of explanation that it was that, first of all, he said, of course, it's not us. And then he said, well, but this guy, he has, you know, he's a dangerous guy, bloodthirsty, et cetera, et cetera. Which is nonsensical, and his biography, and the biography of the victim proves the contrary. But at the time, you could already see how vindictive, how the Czechist mentality, how I don't find words, but you really, and then you had Merkel sitting next to him, watching him while he was smearing a dead man and not saying anything. And I remember that after that, a gang of former retired intelligence personalities had criticized the attitude of the chancellor, who was just very stoic and just tolerating the rants of a Czechist smearing the victim. And I must say, protecting the reputation of the victim has been a hell of a job, and we were involved in that because we managed to have the full biography of the victim quite early and knowing where he was and where. So we were in Prague the first to know that, no, he was not involved in bombings the ones that were named by Putin, because he was simply not there, because at the time he was working for the Georgian Ministry of the Interior. So But that said, the Russian embassy in Berlin is a central for operations. It is strategically placed. The bad news, they are unter den Linden. The good news is next door you have the Brits and the Americans. I sleep better.
And not
true.
To mention,
they're right there.
And not
right
to
there.
Mention, there was reporting recently, excellent reporting on several Russian embassies that actually have antennas for signals intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Right
and
on
are,
the roof.
Yeah, and they're just conducting, and they're always strategically placed, and, like the Russian Orthodox Church is always, interestingly, at the right place, trying to collect information from...
But what do you expect? It's run by a KGB officer.
Well, mm-hmm. There you go. There
exactly.
You go. There you go.
100%. All right, so sticking with Germany, we have seen very, very interesting high-profile arrests recently. In December, someone who was tasked with, protecting Germany from Russia and in charge of counterintelligence operations, and in fact was discovered that he was working for Russia and providing them with information. Then we had another case in January. His name, Arthur E., he came, visited Florida, was interrogated by the FBI, and then in a joint investigation and operation, as soon as he landed at Munich Airport, he was arrested and linked to Karsten from the December case, also suspected of providing intelligence to Russia. And now we just had Thomas, who came out and was recently arrested for similar reasons. Can you talk to us about, what is happening in the intelligence services? And also the other, after that, cover the insane plot by the prince who, in his...
Heinrich.
In his head, thought that he was actually going to task a mercenary/military group to violently overthrow the German government, murder German sitting politicians, and install his own, and be the king of the throne. So can you talk about both of those? It's not funny, but it is of how
insane. I will start with the last one. It's going to be the shorter one.
And he, of course, as in a very good spy novel, was living with the Russian woman. Not that to say anything, but...
Of course. Because if you're insane, you need some more insanity in your life, sure. Okay, so...
And we also know that he had some communications with the Russian embassy that you just finished.
Of course. So our friend Heinrich, it shows how cultish this subculture can be. Also, if you read what they post in their online communities, now these pseudo-monarchist groups have more something that goes along the line of a cultish movement that has little to do with reality. Now, we all laugh because, of course, this is a total delusional loss of reality psychiatric case. But we know that in Germany, politicians have been assassinated by far-right activists. And so this is why this is serious as well, because you don't know when you navigate such a community as somebody who studies information warfare, you have to be able to make a clear social mapping. So you might have a core like Heinrich that is completely... That is a case for not a political scientist, but a psychiatrist. Yeah. But ultimately, when you do the social mapping, you find people who are not delusional at all, who then are linked to organizations that have ties to hostile entities, for instance. Now, the wife is a Russian national and had ties to the Russian embassies. And this is less if, from a Russian perspective, they approached the Russian embassy. I think the Russian embassy was very clear-eyed that this was, they were a bunch of lunatics. But remember what I said, they see every target group, every target person which they try to recruit as a weapon. And the question is then, how can I use their services? And be it only not subversion, but not subversion, yes, but of course they didn't hope to overthrow the, that they would overthrow the government. I think they were clear-eyed enough. But disruption. Disruption is also one level. It's a bit less than subversion. And in terms of disruption, it took a lot of time and resources for domestic intelligence to cut the case and ultimately arrest the guys. Of course, this is energy that is deployed there that is missing somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a surgical tactic as well of Russian services to have many such disruptions going on, many directions, not only on the far right, also on the far left. So there I could see why these ties to the Russian embassy can have been maintained to up to a certain level. I think the Russian embassy sent them back, but the wife still had communication with the Russian embassies because our counterintelligence got a hold of them. So, yes, that's my take on it. I'm not saying it was not a serious case because, as I said, you never know who might gravitate around such movements. As such, the guy is a buffoon.
Yeah. I mean, when I read the case, it was, I half laughed and half was like, this is insane, you know, because assassinating a politician, absolutely, you know, that can be done.
Yes.
But if in his head, if
he's
going to walk into the Bundestag and replace it with a monarchy, that's not happening, not that easy. But again, like you said, and this is all happening in the context and in the middle of, you know, Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine. And you still see their little domestic plots across Europe for destabilizing and operations and, you know, and like you said, distraction operations, destabilizing and whatnot. And
so this is what I can say, and then again, it's only how I view that. I don't claim to have the answers, but subversion, no; disruption, yes.
Mm-hmm.
The case of Carsten Linke is quite it's a bit different. So he was with the BND, the Foreign Intelligence Agency, not in charge of counterintelligence. He was supposed to be promoted to a post in charge of internal security, which is quite different.
Okay.
But just like in the case of Thomas Ha in Koblenz, who was the Office of Procurement, who offered his services himself, and was spotted because he had communications with the consulate in Bonn. Not only in Bonn, but there was one trip to Berlin, I think, if I read right. Walk-ins, as they are called, are usually, this is the most dangerous way of becoming involved with Russian intelligence. It's never long-lived, and I mean, there might have been in the past walk-ins that have been successful, not discovered, possible. But usually, there are plenty of walk-ins get discovered. We have classical, and this is not only like that in Germany. And since I am here discussing this case like that with somebody who's from Canada and then somebody's based in the U.S., we have a very famous case, which was the case of Jeffrey DeLisle, who was also a walk-in, Canadian, was detected by our American allies, and same agency, just walks into the consulate and expects not to be seen, which is
crazy.
Right. So, but this is a guy from the procurement office who probably is not well versed in intelligence work, probably doesn't know, and claims to have been frustrated, and that's why he did it. Okay. Now, I have other questions. If this man had the political sensibilities he is supposed to be having and a certain affection for far-right ideology, I don't know if it's true. It's been reported in the press, so I'm just venturing, you know. My question is, who did the clearance of this guy? Does he have a clearance? If so, who did the clearance, and why didn't they see anything? And that's a question for the military intelligence, which is, of all intelligence services, you think the BND is dysfunctional, meet the military intelligence office, which is, you don't want to have military intelligence at that level. It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare of unprofessionalism. It's a nightmare of resources, expertise, anything, you name it. They can't do anything without the help of the civil authorities, which is the Verfassungsschutz. That's where the expertise is in counterintelligence.
Okay.
So and they have cleared a wide range of officers with RFD affiliation. There is a wide group of officers of the IFD who are still in the system and who have the highest security clearance, well, for the Bundeswehr, not NATO, which is the three level. They call that U3, which is probably the case of this officer for at the procurement office in Koblenz. So in that case, you have to ask the military intelligence who conducted the clearance, how long did it take, and didn't you notice anything? Just like they did not notice anything when they cleared other prominent figures of the AfD who are sitting in parliaments in Germany and who are former military.
Wow.
So this is a question you have to ask. In the case of Carsten Linke, appears to be a bit more complicated. The case was uncovered thanks to information sharing from an ally who warned the Germans. It's not good for us. It's not good for our reputation. It's not good for plenty of things. And now, it makes a bit much with the BND. The BND has been in the criticism because they missed big things, or they misread big things. So maybe they saw them, but they decided not to make them known to the political level. We have a problem of politicization as well. We seem to have a problem of dysfunctional structure. And then the problem that has been actually pointed out by two former heads of the BND, and there I agree, is the overregulation. The overregulation of BND makes the BND absolutely not functioning properly because they are walking on eggs. They're always afraid to, you know. And so there is a very interesting paper that has been published, an article that has been published by the two former heads, Hanning and Schindler, and I think they have a point there, although they suggest that the service be placed under the Ministry of Defense and taken away from the oversight of the Chancellery, which would avoid them to be directly linked to political influence. I mean, I don't know if it's really the motivation behind, but it makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm not a legal expert. From what I know, it is hardly feasible with our constitution, and there are all kinds of legal problems that would arise. I have no idea. I think the point that they are making about the dysfunctional problems, the dysfunctionality of the BND and the overruling is correct. And I said it recently, for me, the problem is actually the quality of the oversight. And in Germany, you have oversight committees with people who are at least should not be sitting on these committees. I mean, not only speaking of I'm not only speaking of the Intelligence Committee. The Intelligence Committee is also a problem. But you can't have people sitting on oversight committees who have direct links to the Russian Embassy or the Russian Federation or travel to Donbass. It's absolutely.
Yeah. Natalie, so, we have the same problem. We have the same problem on our Intelligence Oversight Committee. Exactly the same.
Well, and so that's a problem. And then the second problem, which is more prominent in my eyes, is what's happening at the Bundestag. But I just addressed it. They need to be serious about internal security at the Bundestag. It's very important. They also need to make sure that the leaks stop. Because the leaks shy away information sharing from our allies who think we are a Swiss cheese. So it shouldn't be very hard to understand for politicians or people working for politicians. But given, you know, who sits at the Bundestag, some biographies are quite interesting. Yeah. That was Linke and the case of Arthur E. Arthur E. has admitted everything. There is a wide signals intelligence coverage of his activities, so I don't think he can deny much. I haven't been following how this evolved. I trust the prosecutors in Germany who have proved in the past, now specifically in the Khangushvili case, that they are professionals. We feared the worst during the Khangushvili story because we feared that the case would be handled at the Berlin prosecutor level, went to the general prosecutor, and then they did an incredible investigative work. Hurrah, thank you. And I guess this is going to happen as well in the Linke case, in the Thomas Haag case. We don't know exactly what has been shared. But the very fact that this guy, just out of frustration, thought, "I am going to betray my country," is quite telling.
That's incredible. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we had a case here in Italy, one that we know of, actually two. One was industrial espionage. The other one was at the NATO base, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, Napoli. I followed that one.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Okay, Biot, just for €3,000, I think they gave him. You know, for each drop. That's it. That's all we're talking about.
Well, he was not doing it for money, obviously. He was doing it for something else.
Yeah. There must have been triggers or other motivators.
No, but you know what is interesting? That since, at least for the past few years, it looks like, and correct me if I'm wrong, that Western intelligence agencies have shifted their tactics. Because before, it feels like they were like squirrels, like piling up chestnuts and held everything to themselves, which obviously is necessary if you want to understand what is happening and to unravel a network. But, they did it for decades. Whereas over the past year, I've just seen country after country after country in Europe, exposing Russia's spy cells, expelling them, naming them, shaming them. There was one operation, if I'm correct, in Sweden. I mean, they really took an arrest over
sleepers.
The top.
In Sweden, sleepers.
Yeah, they took the arrest over the top. I mean, literally, I'm jealous. I wish our FBI did something like this. But basically, the sleepers, Russian spies, were living in, were home sleeping, and you had helicopters come. And you had helicopters come in the middle of 6 a.m. in a residential neighborhood. And
well,
listen,
when they arrested the network in the United States to which Mrs. Chapman used to belong, it was quite a...
It was dramatic, too.
Yes.
But we haven't had this kind of action
for a long time.
The next day, or even the same day, the Anschlag in Germany were arrested. So they had the entire network
mapped out.
Managed to tackle mapped the entire out. Network, and also, again, an example of intelligence sharing, where the Anschlag would still be the Anschlag, an engineer and a housewife somewhere in Germany, had not American intelligence dismantled this network. I think this is. I'm not sure. Is this linked to the defection of Skripal? I think I remember that. But
It could be because someone clearly.
It was a British American work that protected Germany again.
Wow.
Again.
So foreign intelligence is providing Germany with information that it needs, but not from inside.
No, that's the domestic intelligence. You have, I think in Italy, you have similar systems.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the domestic intelligence agency that also does counterintelligence. And so the problem of the domestic intelligence agency is really, if you criticize their work, they are really a lot of on their plate. There is a lot of expertise there, but it's the fragmentation of the system because you have 16 field offices in every Bundesland, and you have the big central. Bundesamt für Verfassungsschutz, and then you have this in every, like in Bavaria, they have their own, in North Rhine-Westphalia, they have their own, etc. So there is a fragmentation of the intelligence system, which makes the fluidity of information, circulation of information, a bit complicated. It's not. So imagine now trans agency. So. Your thought. And one dimension is also that every Bundesland has a different minister, which is governing the entire thing. So you have certain Bundesländer where...
Brandenburg. They got problems in Brandenburg.
Oh, I live in Brandenburg. Here is the main problem living. but you have, for instance, political parties that demand the abolition of the domestic intelligence agency.
Mm.
So the Communist Party.
We have that here, and that's the Republican Party. Who now is attacking the FBI because the FBI is a domestic with CIA capabilities, but it is a domestic, and they're attacking, pretty much dismantling them and the whole Department of Justice and anything that can hold anyone accountable.
Exactly.
All right. Well, on this good words, cheers.
Hi, everybody. If you enjoyed this podcast and you'd like to help us out with our independent work, please subscribe to Kremlin File on Substack and on our YouTube channel. Kremlin File is hosted by Olga Lautman and me, Monique Kamara. Our production team is headed by Matty Kaparov, and the theme music by Oreste Kamara. So please don't forget to visit our Kremlin File Substack for links to our socials and to wherever you'd like to listen to podcasts.